let's think about the subject of human evolution. This is where it becomes very interesting, especially when it comes to a Christian worldview. When it comes to creating novel species and speciation through Darwinism for other species, it doesn't seem like the stakes are that high. When it comes to human evolution, many, many questions come into play here. And I'm not going to explore the theological points here tonight. Instead, I want to explore the scientific conclusions. And next week, we're going to study the theological idea. Well, just to give you kind of an overview here, what we have are two different genuses. So are you familiar with the language? So a phylum at the top would be like the big camp, big branch of the tree. And then as you move down into order and class and family and whatever, okay, and then you get down to genus. So that's a big camp there. There's the genus of Australopithecus. So you see this here? These are Australopithecines. Australopithecus, 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 all the way down. So we got these, but then we have the genus Homo, Homo rudolfensis, Homo habilis, Homo robustus, Homo erectus, Homo heidelbergensis, Homo neanderthalus, or if you prefer, Neanderthalus, and then Homo sapiens. It's interesting here is that Neanderthals overlap with Homo sapiens, that these aren't some kind of an intermediate link between us and they're not antecedent, they're not before us that gave birth to Homo sapiens. They actually exist alongside Homo sapiens. In fact, if you study the most recent literature, like Francisco Ayala on the West Coast, he says that Neanderthals interbred with humans, that all of us have a little bit of a percent of Neanderthal DNA, and that, in fact, Neanderthals shouldn't be a separate species, but are humans. If you were walking down the street and there was a Neanderthal, you wouldn't even be able to notice. That's the most current view. Now, in 6 months, that could change, but I'm just giving you the most current view up till today. In this whole study of paleo-ancient anthropology, anthropos meaning man or humans, paleoanthropology, you have what are called the lumpers and the splitters. The lumpers, they look at Neanderthals and Homo sapiens and they say, I think we should lump them together. That's just one species. Splitters would say, no, Homo sapiens over here, Neanderthals over there. Same thing is true with Heidelbergensis and Homo erectus. They would say, the cranium is a certain amount of cubic centimeters, and it's a little bit bigger, and the femur is a little bit pointed outward, a little bit more, whereas Homo erectus is this way. And so there's the lumpers and splitters. And so there's all this debate over, is this a separate species or not? What isn't debated is that when we go from the genus of Australopithecus or Australopithecines over to the genus Homo, we have a huge gap in the fossil record. So let's explore this a little bit. Number one, Australopithecines to the genus Homo is poorly represented in the fossil record. Ernst Mayr, evolutionary biologist, he says this, the earliest fossils of Homo, Homo rudolfensis, Homo erectus, are separated from Australopithecus by a large unbridged gap. How could we explain this seeming saltation? Saltation is like a big drastic change. Not having any fossils that can serve as missing links, we have to fall back on the time-honored method of historical science, the construction of a historical narrative. Now, if you're reading that closely, what's that saying? We don't have fossils as intermediates between Australopithecines and the genus Homo. So how do we explain it? We have to come up with a historical narrative. So in other words, we don't have the hard data. The data are not there. We have to come up with an explanation that says this later became that, even though we don't have the data themselves. Jonathan Hawks out of the University of Wisconsin. He says, no Australopithecine species is obviously transitional. Daniel Lieberman, Harvard paleoanthropologist, he says, of the various transitions that occurred during human evolution, The transition from Australopithecus to Homo was undoubtedly one of the most critical in its magnitude and consequences. As with many key evolutionary events, there is both good and bad news. Now stay with me here. So how do we get this? He said, well, there's good news and there's the bad news. First, the bad news. What's this? The bad news is that many details of this transition are obscure because of the paucity of the fossil and archaeological records. So the bad news is we don't have the fossil or archaeological records to show the gap. What's the good news? The good news is, although we lack many details about exactly how, when, and where the transition occurred from Australopithecus to Homo, we have sufficient data from before and after the transition to make some inferences about the overall nature of key changes that did occur. You know what that tells us about the gap between Australopithecines and Homo? Nothing. What he's saying is the bad news is we don't have any archaeological or fossil evidence in between, but what we do have is the before and after. Yeah, we know we got the before and after. No one's disputing the before and after. The question is, what happened in between? That's not very good news. In fact, that's bad news on both counts. Hominin fossils, number two. Now, sometimes the literature will say hominid fossils or hominin fossils. No big deal. Hominin fossils are also very rare. Just how rare are these fossils? Here's Donald Johanson. He was the discoverer of Lucy. He's an American paleoanthropologist. He said about half the time span in the last 3 million years remains undocumented by any human fossils. From the earliest period of hominid evolution, more than 4 million years ago, only a handful of largely undiagnostic fossils have been found. A handful. Pause for a second. The whole idea that we've got this mapped out and you just line up the skulls and it's very clear, very gradual. Here's the guy who found Lucy, one of the best discoveries, skeletons that we have. He's saying this whole 4 million year period, Australopithecus and the genus Homo, he's saying this is a handful of fossils and many of them are undiagnostic, that they can't explain anything. Constance Holden, she says the primary scientific evidence relied on by paleoanthropologists to construct man's evolutionary history is a pitifully small array of bones. One anthropologist has compared the task to that of reconstructing the plot of War and Peace with 13 randomly selected pages. You know, War and Peace, you ever have to read that? Oh, that's a brutal book. Regardless, it's huge, and it's having 13 pages and having to try and put together the plot. Extant fossils, so existing fossils, are usually incomplete, number three. When we do find fossils, which are rare, the fossils we do find aren't complete. So this whole idea that we have a full picture, for example, when you see National Geographic and you have, you know, the paintings of what these species look like, how complete are the actual fossils? Here's Lucy. Now, this is one of the most demonstrable finds of the 20th century. Incredible find. This is 40% of the skeleton. So, one of, if not the greatest find that we found, we have 40% of the total organism. And one of the interesting thing about Johanson is he said, Lucy goes back millions of years. And when I came across the hillside, there were all these different bones, you know, the femur and this and that and the other thing, rib cage. And I started looking at it in the cranium and I collected them all together. And I just thought to myself, if there was a rainstorm, these could have been mixed in with a bunch of other different bones and we wouldn't know if these were even from the same organism. Which his critics raised the question, so you're saying these were there for 2 million years and we don't know if these are even from the same organism? Well, no, because maybe a storm could have, you know, slid the mud and we would have lost which part goes to which organism. How do you know that didn't already happen? And these different parts actually aren't from the same organism itself. Well, regardless, let's say that they are. I believe that they are. It's still only 40%. That's all we have. Stephen Jay Gould. He says most hominid fossils, even though they serve as a basis for endless speculation and elaborate storytelling, are fragments of jaws and scraps of skulls. Henry Gee, chief science writer of Nature, he says all the evidence for the hominid lineage between about 10 and 5 million years ago, several thousand generations of living creatures can be fitted into a small box. Guys, when we look at the actual extant existing data, the archaeology, the bones, we're looking at a scrap of jawbone, we're looking at some teeth, a rib, and we're trying to put together a narrative to explain how one caused the other. There is a paucity, a lack of evidence here. And number four, hominin drawings are very subjective. I don't know if you've ever seen this in textbooks, but you look at this and you get a picture of, what is that? That's Australopithecus. But it looks very human. It's a humanizing of an ape. And then there's also an apifying of a human. So look at the bright eyes, the attention, and yet here these are the genus Homo, and yet they're very ape-like. Now, these are drawings by artists, non-scientists, and they're making these drawings based on a handful of bones and teeth. And it's what this is creating is a picture in your mind of a narrative that we're seeing. And yet, I'm not saying the narrative is false. I'm saying it's a narrative. And with a narrative, we need to see what is the evidence for that narrative.